An important private member's bill has made it all the way through Parliament and the Senate and will take effect after the next federal election.
I expect that what we'll see is a Parliament where, instead of the average MP voting with their party 100% of the time, I think you'll start to see a greater diversity of views, where MPs might vote with their party 90% of the time but break rank some 5 or 10% of the time.
On the feature interview today, we talk with the MP who sponsored the bill, Michael Chong, about what the passage of the Reform Act could mean for things such as abortion legislation. In the news, ARPA launches a grassroots initiative on Bill 10 in Alberta. LifeSite News is threatened with legal action for speaking the truth. There's a new legal opinion in the campaign for a parental consent law in Saskatchewan. And a huge thank you to We Need a Law supporters. The final numbers are in on the latest fundraising campaign.
And now, Lighthouse News. Lighthouse News is a presentation of ARPA, the Association for Reform Political Action. Here's your host, Al Sebring.
The Alberta legislature is on summer hiatus now, but the new MLAs there are going to be subject to some lobbying over the off-season. ARPA has launched an awareness campaign urging people to contact their representatives to ask for changes to Bill 10. That's the law which mandates that all schools in the province approve any activities or clubs that promote diversity, with a special focus on gay straight alliance clubs.
We just printed 3,000 or 4,000 letters and had them distributed right across the province of Alberta through all the churches there. So we sent bundles to each of the churches that we work closely with. And those letters just lay out what the problem is with Bill 10, what can still be done about it, especially through the summer, now that the MLAs are home. So what can we as Christians do to help them understand the gravity of Bill 10, why it's revolutionary?
ARPA Executive Director Mark Penninga says the package also includes a reference to a possible legal challenge of the bill, which he says may become a real possibility.
We've already seen an opinion from the Justice Center for Constitutional Freedoms that makes it very clear that at least parts of Bill 10 are unconstitutional. They clearly violate what the Supreme Court of Canada has already established in the Loyola Court decision, and we concur with that there is many sound reasons why Bill 10 could be considered unconstitutional, and it's definitely something we want to explore further.
To that end, the hope is that MLAs, especially the new ones who were just elected, will opt for amendments to the bill.
Whenever you have new MLAs who are becoming familiar with the issues, common sense speaks louder than when these MLAs have been in their roles long term. They've already come to accept a certain position that's been mandated by their party whips. And on Bill 10, common sense says that the law went way too far when it comes to usurping parental authority. It's unrealistic that they would repeal the legislation, but at the same sense, I think we can be optimistic that they would at least consider amendments which would make it not so bad of a piece of legislation.
If you're not in Alberta or you haven't seen the letter, there's a link up on our homepage to all the information you need. LifeSite News, which describes itself as Canada's premier pro-life website, is facing a threat of legal action. The threat comes from the public school board in the Peel District in Ontario. It's over a story the website posted earlier this year. LifeSite had sent a reporter to a meeting in Toronto, a meeting dealing with the promotion of so-called gender equity in the public school system. The reporter actually recorded the proceedings, and LifeSite's editor-in-chief, John Henry Weston, was on Rebel Media with Brian Lilly last week, detailing some of the more egregious stuff that was said at the meeting, material which was included in the website's news item on the conference.
One of the teachers, one of the principals, Helen Mistry is her name. She's the instructional coordinator for equity and inclusive education at the Peel District School Board. And she said, equity is not an add-on. It is the foundation of everything. And this is in response to parents wanting to pull their kids out of a day where they're going to be promoting same-sex marriage. And these teachers are there at this meeting laughing about parents' concerns that way, saying, you can withdraw them from a day, but this sort of agenda is injected into the whole of education.
The Peel District's lawyer wants the story taken down, saying the content could be viewed as, quote, an incitement to hate. Weston says they're just repeating what was said. The school district also objected to the use of pictures of children from the district in the story. Again, Weston says those pictures were republications of images previously published online. He says they're rejecting all of the district's claims and are now demanding the district immediately either withdraw in writing the allegations or provide adequate particulars to support them. We've got a variety of links up on the Lighthouse News homepage to the various aspects of this story, including the full Rebel Media interview with Mr. Weston. We need a law. ARPA's expressly pro-life arm is continuing efforts to have a parental consent law passed in Saskatchewan. The law would require that parents sign off on abortions for underage children. The campaign's been going on for more than a year and a half, and Director Mike Schutten says it's getting some attention.
We're getting responses from the politicians there, and quite often those responses include a rationale for the status quo, appealing to this concept of mature minor. So in Canada, parental consent is generally required for medical treatment of a minor, but there are exceptions, and these exceptions fall under this mature minor concept.
So, to ease those concerns, we need a law went to Ontario lawyer Dina Warren for an independent legal opinion on how the mature minor issue might be related to parental consent.
In Canada, already right now, we have many age restrictions. For example, when a person can vote, drive, sell property, etc. Also, particularly dealing with this parental consent component, youth under 18 who wish to marry need to get parental consent. And then she gives this very compelling quote where she says, like abortion, marriage carries with it potentially serious consequences and implications, yet choosing to marry is a reversible decision and abortion is not, end quote. That really goes to the heart of what we're trying to achieve in Saskatchewan. Right now, there are adolescents who do not have the ability to make decisions as adults do, who are being coerced into thinking that abortion is the only choice for their unplanned pregnancy.
Speaking of We Need a Law, the organization has just wrapped up a highly successful fundraising campaign. Karen Banster handles the finances, and she says, in addition to the checks and pledges, some of the notes that were included in the correspondence were really supportive.
May our awesome God do mighty things through the work of ARPA and We Need a Law. May He give you the strength and wisdom each day as you work at bringing truth and light to our country. And there is another one. Please continue to do the good work for all of us. A picture is definitely worth a thousand words. The pink and blue flags have now been seen all over the country. Blessings to you, and prayers are being lifted up.
The campaign increased monthly giving by about $2,500 and also raised substantial funds in one-time donations. Mike and Karen both want to say thank you and to assure you the money will be well used. Back with more after this.
Have you checked out ARPA Canada on Facebook or Twitter lately? Social media is a great way to get information communicated quickly to your network. We regularly post news, pictures, and videos, and our posts are easy to share, either from our pages or directly from our website to your own Facebook and Twitter. We would be so grateful if you would help us bring a Christian perspective by sharing our posts with your friends.
And we're back on the program. With me on the line today is Michael Chong, the Member of Parliament for Wellington Halton Hills in Ontario. And we're talking about a rare occurrence, a private member's bill that's made it all the way through Parliament. Last week it passed the Senate. That means it's about to become law. The bill is the Reform Act, and Michael Chong is the member who initiated it. Mr. Chong, welcome to the program, and first of all, congratulations. This doesn't happen often.
Well, thank you for having me. And no, it doesn't happen very often, and we're thrilled that the bill is passed into law.
To start off, can you give us an outline of what is in this Reform Act? What does this new law actually reform?
Well, what the bill does at a very broad level is two things. First, it removes the legal requirement that's been in place for 45 years, since October 1970, that the party leader approve or veto the party candidate. And it removes that requirement in the Canada Elections Act and leaves it up to each respective registered political party to decide how they will select their party candidates. So in other words, what it will allow parties to do is to democratize themselves and restore greater local control over the selection of party candidates. The second thing the bill does is it puts in place, for the first time in decades, a requirement that caucuses, when they meet for the first time after a general election, that they put in place a series of votes that will make the decision as to whether what powers the party leader will get and what powers elected members of parliament will get.
This notion that party candidates no longer have to have the explicit approval of the leader. During the parliamentary debate, there was an amendment added that still requires a signature from somebody designated by each party. Isn't there a potential that the PMO or the party leader could still exercise a lot of influence there? I mean, Dale Smith wrote an op-ed in the National Post a few weeks back suggesting that, for example, the designee could be the leader's chief of staff. Would this really fix the problem you're trying to address?
That's correct. The party could revert to the party leader or someone designated nominated by the party leader to give final approval to the party candidate. But I believe that over the long run, parties will democratize themselves and put in place rules that will ensure that it's local party members that make the final decision.
The act had pretty broad support across party lines. Your website has endorsements from Justin Trudeau, Tom Mulcair, Elizabeth May. Only 7 MPs voted against this act in the House. So it appears the political class, if I can use that term, understood what you're trying to do. But on the other hand, it appears mostly procedural, one of those inside baseball kind of things, kind of like Robert's Rules of Order. Everybody knows it's there, but nobody really knows what it says. It's interesting for procedural geeks like us, but how is this good for the average Canadian? I mean, voter turnout shows folks are less and less engaged in the political process.
Well, quite simply, what it's going to do is it's going to empower MPs to represent their constituents on the floor of the House of Commons. What the bill mandates is that after each and every general election, at the first meeting of caucus of elected MPs, these elected MPs will have to make 4 decisions as to whether or not the party leader should get certain powers or elected members of parliament. And the 4 decisions will be on the following 4 sets of rules. The first concerns the election and removal of the caucus chair. The second concerns who should have the power to expel and readmit a member of parliament from the party caucus. The third set of rules concern the review and removal of the party leader, and the fourth concern the election of an interim leader while the party outside parliament conducts a leadership race in the event that the party leader suddenly dies, resigns, becomes incapacitated, or suddenly is removed while in office. Now, why does this matter? What is the practical result of this? Currently in our system, party leaders in Canada have enormous powers that leaders in other democracies do not have. With the implementation of this bill, what I believe will happen is that members of parliament will empower themselves by taking away the power of the party leader to unilaterally remove them from the party caucus. And what that will allow members of parliament to do is on occasion disagree with their party leader and vote on behalf of their constituents without having to face the consequence of being expelled from the caucus or removed as the party candidate.
Will this embolden members of a caucus who hold what might be considered unpopular views to bring that stuff up more often? I'm thinking of the social conservative contingent. Efforts like Stephen Woodward's bill to declare unborn babies as fully human, Mark Warrow's motion 408 on sex selective abortion. Debate on those motions was pretty much cut off before it even started. But in the context of this new act, when MPs introduce these kinds of bills or motions, they could end up in disfavor with their party leader, at least under the present system. Under the new bill, does this sort of fix that a little bit, or is the real power still in the Prime Minister's prerogative to appoint people to cabinet? I mean, I don't see Stephen Woodworth or Maurice Vellacott appointed to cabinet, and some people think the social conservative positions and the non-appointment are related.
Well, I don't think the Reform Act is going to fix all of our problems in our democratic system, but I think it's a first good step, and I think it will lead to a greater diversity of voices on particular issue.
Is there a relationship between this bill and Ed Komarnicki's motion of a few weeks ago on conscience rights? I mean, between the two of them, there seems to be a very solid effort to strengthen the voices of individual backbench members.
I think so. I'm hoping that what we're witnessing here with Ed Komarnicki's motion, with the motion that Brad Trost introduced to reform standing committee structures, with Scott Reed's motion to reform the way in which we elect the speaker by going to a preferential ballot, with all these initiatives, what I'm hoping we are witnessing is the beginning of a movement to reform the House of Commons.
Okay, you're in the Conservative caucus. Is any of this a veiled criticism of the way Stephen Harper's been running the show?
Not at all. If this was about the current Prime Minister or Mr. Trudeau or Mr. Mulcair, then the solution would be easy. Simply replace the party leader in power and you solve the problem. But I am firmly convinced that the problem here is not the current party leaders in power. It is the rules of the system. And so that's why the bill addresses some of these fundamental rules that concern the governance of elected MPs and party caucuses.
The act doesn't actually take effect till after the election in October. Will Parliament operate differently in any substantive way people will be able to notice after the election?
At the end of the day, I don't think it's going to be a revolutionary bill that will completely upend the current system that we have, and neither should we. I think our system has evolved through hundreds of years and has provided the peace and prosperity that we now enjoy in this country. That said, the system does need to be rebalanced, and I expect that what we'll see is a parliament where, instead of the average MP voting with their party 100% of the time, I think you'll start to see a greater diversity of views where MPs might vote with their party 90% of the time, but break rank some 5 or 10% of the time.
Sir, we're out of time. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
And just a programming note before we wrap it up this week. We're into summer now. The kids are out of school, and Lighthouse News for the months of July and August won't be delivered to you every Monday. We're going to a bi-weekly production schedule for the summertime. That means for the month of July, we'll have programs on the 13th and the 27th, and for August, on the 10th and the 24th. We'll talk to you then.
This has been Lighthouse News, delivering news and commentaries on today's current events to equip Christians for their task in the public square. Production Manager Brian Grimm, Technical Director Nate Boscher. Questions or feedback? You can leave us an audio comment by clicking on the answering machine button at the top of the Lighthouse News homepage, or you can send us an email, info@arpacanada.ca. Be sure to join us again in 2 weeks for another edition of Lighthouse News.